Moshe
Akiva.
Akiva. Akiva Aaron.
Moshe Akiva Brandeis.
Moshe Akiva.
Rabbi Moshe Akiva Brandeis.
The parasha begins with the Meraglim, the spies that go into Eretz Yisrael, that go into Eretz Canaan, to spy out the land for Klal Yisrael. And it's a difficult parasha. It's a very difficult parasha to understand what went wrong, what was the chait. The first Rashi sheds a bit of light. Rashi says, Lomo nismucha, why the juxtaposition between Miriam at the end of last week's parasha, who speaks Lashon Hara on Moshe Rabbeinu and is punished with Saras, and Klal Yisrael waits for her for 7 days, and the beginning of this week's parasha, the parasha of the Meraglim. Why the juxtaposition? And Rashi tells us the reason is because the Meraglim should have learnt the lesson from Miriam. Why did they speak Lashon Hara on Eretz Yisrael? But it's difficult, because if you think about it, if you have a teacher in a, we have a manal here, if you have a teacher in a school and they're trying to threaten a child, child's misbehaving, of course they've tried it positively, positive reinforcement, it's not working out, and it's time to tell put the child in place, you tell them, do you know, if you continue this misbehavior, I'm going to have to do what we did yesterday to Yaakov Tzvi, whatever it is. Yesterday you saw how he had detention, he had to stay behind in school, he had to write lines, whatever it was. And we're going to have to treat you in a similar fashion. So it's worthwhile behaving. A child needs that sometimes. But an adult, one would expect, if you just put him back into place, if you just remind him of his position, remind him of how he should be behaving, hopefully he'll just click back into place. If Lashon Hara is an Isser in the Torah, and we're talking here about the Meraglim, they were, the Balaturim says, Hamos Gematria 50. They were Sori Chamishim. These were leaders of Klal Yisrael, the Meraglim. These are great people. Ksherim they were at the time, says Rashi. They need to a reminder of Miriam. They need Miriam's Tzaras to remind them that you mustn't speak Lashon Hara. It's very difficult. Reb Shimon Schwab in Mayan Hashi'eva, speaks about this. And he says, there must be a chiddush. There has to be something new in Miriam, which from there, we expect the Meraglim to have learned the lesson which they did not learn from Miriam. So what is it that happened with Miriam and Moshe Rabbeinu, the Lashon Hara that Miriam spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, from which the Meraglim was supposed to learn the lesson? What is it? Zok Reb Shimon Shvav Amor de Gavot. He says like this. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was different to most people. Most people are bothered if you speak against them. It's only natural. And that's the problem with Lashon Hara. In essence, the problem with Lashon Hara is you're speaking against another person. The other person will be offended. The other person will be sensitive. You've hurt his feelings. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu was beyond that. He was above that. And the Torah is made there and then when Miriam speaks about him. It says, "Well, Ish Moshe Anov Mi'oid Mikol HaAdam." The Torah testifies there to show you it didn't bother him. He's a very humble person. It was like talking about a stone or a piece of wood. As much as it would bother this shtender, if I were to start talking against this shtender, that's how much it bothered Moshe Rabbeinu. It didn't bother him at all. And so there was a very big chiddush in Miriam speaking against Moshe Rabbeinu and getting punished for it. Because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't offended, and nevertheless, Miriam was punished. And therefore, the Meraglim should have learnt the lesson from this. You think it's okay to speak about sticks, stones, mountains, valleys, Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, the grapes, the people of the land who aren't Yidden? You think it's okay to do that? Don't talk against Moshe Rabbeinu, even if he isn't offended. Don't talk against Eretz Canaan, even if the land, the sand and the stones won't be offended. That's the vort he says. The way he explains it is, since Moshe Rabbeinu is a chefter of Kedusha, it says in last week's parasha, Ba'avdi Moshe, says Rashi, Ba'avdi, afal pi she'eino Moshe, Moshe afal pi she'eino avdi. Even if it wouldn't be Moshe Rabbeinu, the great leader of Klal Yisrael, he wouldn't be an Eved Hashem, it wouldn't be the right thing to do. And even if it would be an Eved Hashem who isn't Moshe Rabbeinu, it would be a problem. So Shimon Shvav says, what do you mean by an Eved Hashem who's not Moshe Rabbeinu? So he says it means this point. An Eved Hashem, even if he's not, doesn't have a personal, the normal feelings that human beings have, even if he wouldn't be offended, he's Avdi Moshe, he's still a Dovar Shel Kedusha. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. So although it's not offending him as it were the normal Moshe, but he's Avdi, and therefore don't talk against him. That's how Reb Shimon Shvab explains it. But perhaps we can take this a little further. He's saying a Dovar Shel Kedusha, something holy, don't talk against, whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu, whether it's Eretz Canaan. So Eretz Canaan is a holy thing, we shouldn't speak against it. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks another question in this week's parasha. He says, we know that they received 40 years for the 40 days that they were traveling through Eretz Yisrael. As they were trekking through the land, it took 40 days. On their return, and how they spoke about Eretz Yisrael, they were punished with 40 years. Yom Lashana, 40 years, Keneged, the 40 days in Eretz Canaan. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, this is perplexing. How long did the Avera take? How long did it take them to actually say what they wanted to say about Eretz Yisrael? 3 minutes? When they came back, and they came to the Yidden, and they told them, you know, there's huge grapes, massive fruit, look at these things we brought here, there's giants there. How long did it take to tell the story? It's just a couple of psukim. How long did it take to tell the story of their spying Eretz Yisrael? 20 minutes of the very dramatic orators. How long did it take? It says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, why 40 days? It's a few minutes. So Reb Chaim is a Moed Gezach. He says, there's a source from which Lashon Hara comes. Lashon Hara is rooted in something which is a negative perspective. And he says, if we see the world in a positive light, if the Meraglim would have gone into Eretz Canaan and seen it in a positive way, they wouldn't have had what to say. It was 40 days of a negative perspective in the land. They had a choice. They saw these huge giants. They were huge. Rashi says that the sun looked like a necklace around their neck. These people were massive. People were dying everywhere. So they had a choice. Either we can look at this and say, help, these are huge people. We're not going to be able to take them out. How are we going to win this war? It's Oren Betzurois, it's walled cities. How are we going to scale these walls? How are we going to get through this? People are dying everywhere. There's plagues in this country. There must be bad fumes. Must be full of plagues. Must be a lot of contamination. Why are people dropping dead everywhere we go? The fruit are huge. How do you deal with this type of... How do you deal with kitchens with these types of foods which are... An adult has to hold with two hands or eight people to carry a bunch of grapes. This is not normal. That was one way they could look at it. But they could have also said, Moshe Rabbeinu took us out of Mitzrayim. We've come out of the land which nobody else was able to come from. No slave ever escaped Mitzrayim. Kriyas Yamsuf. This is going to be amazing. Imagine watching these massive people being taken down by Moshe Rabbeinu and the armies. It's going to be an epic battle. It's going to be amazing. The Nisim, the miracles we're going to see. The dying could have been translated, as Rashi tells us. It's a land which is a cheles es yeshuveha. It's eating up its inhabitants, is what they told Klal Yisrael later. But they could have said, like Rashi says, which was the real reason for the deaths, they could have said to themselves, Hashem is occupying the inhabitants of this land so that we can concentrate on our job, on spying the land. It's only for when we're here. It's the opposite of what you think. This is not a land which is plagued by death. It's a great land. It's just that people are dying so that you can continue with your job. So they had a choice of how to look at it. And they chose, unfortunately, the negative side. They came back with the Lashon Hara. So says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, it's the 40 days of that perspective, the source of Lashon Hara. Seeing things negatively, and therefore 40 years for 40 days, Yom Lashana. So you could say, what's wrong? Okay, that's the reason why a person ends up speaking Lashon Hara. We found the source, we found the reason. But is that intrinsically wrong? So just recently I was learning with someone in the evening, and I showed him the beginning of Mesilas Yesharim, and I told him the Slobodka way of reading it. It's different to the way you would normally read it if you're reading it yourself. He got so excited, he took a picture of it, and he highlighted that sentence. I want to share it with you. It was a theme of Slobodka. It wasn't just the way they read it. The Mesilas Yesharim starts his classic work by asking the million-dollar, the life's biggest question. What's a person doing in this world? What's Chivas Ha'odom Ba'ilamai? That's how he begins Mesilas Yesharim. And he answers it in the very first page, in his very first words, and he says, Lehis'aneg al Hashem, to enjoy yourself, to have pleasure with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's how you would normally read it. What that means, okay, it's a lifetime's work. How one enjoys themselves with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the pastor says, with Torah, with mitzvahs, living a Torah life. However, in Slobodka they used to say it differently. They would put the comma like this. Lehis'aneg, comma, al Hashem. This is how they read it. Meaning, the purpose of life is to enjoy yourself. I'm not going to enjoy that, right? When the purpose of life is to enjoy yourself, comma, al Hashem. What does that mean? They said like this. First of all, you've got to be enjoying this world. You've got to be enjoying life. If we're not enjoying this world, then you can't channel it to the Ribbono Shel Olam, because you have nothing to channel. So the first point is, before you get to Hashem, the first point is, enjoy the world. Enjoy the streets, enjoy the family, enjoy the people you meet, enjoy what you're doing, enjoy the world the Ribbono Shel Olam created, the trees, the flowers. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the food you eat. Comma. Now, are you doing that? Great, Al Hashem. Now you can start saying, who created these trees, these flowers, the food I eat, the family I have, whatever it is that I'm thankful for, grateful for. But the first point is, if you don't enjoy it, first of all, well, there's nothing to work with. That's how they said it in Slobodka. So we can understand that there's an intrinsic value. It's an important point, just to see the world positively, just to enjoy the world that the Ribbono Shel Olam created. So there is something about seeing the world in a positive light, having that perspective. It's not always easy, of course. Moshe Shmuel Shapira, the Rosh Hashiva, Zatzal, of Be'er Yaakov, he would bring the Gemara in Shabbos Yudam at base. The Gemara says, it's now Erev Shabbos, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, LeMoshe. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Matona toiva yeshli beveis gnozai. I have a wonderful present in my storehouse. What's this present? The Shabbos Shema. Vani mevakish litna liyisrael. I'd like to give it to Klal Yisrael, this present. Leich lo hoidiyem. Go and tell them. Tell them about this present I have for them. So what's this idea of a present? Give it to them. You know, why are you telling Moshe Rabbeinu to tell them I've got a present for them, tell them it's a good thing. So Moshe Shmuel explains that not always when someone receives a present does he appreciate it. Sometimes there's difficulties attached. Some people find a long Shabbos afternoon very difficult, so many hours. And it's hard. So Moshe Shmuel, he used to say this story, a true story that happened in St. Petersburg, to illustrate the message that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave to Moshe Rabbeinu with Shabbos. And he said that in St. Petersburg, over Yomim Noiroim, Shonim, Kippur, there were quite a few wealthy people that would spend the time there. Not because it was Yom Noiroim, it was just a time where if you had connections to the government, this is Tsarist Russia, you would spend your time in St. Petersburg, the capital. And so they found in the shul, I don't know if it's a shul that still exists today, sure that the main shul that's there today is the only one that communist Russia allowed to remain. Perhaps it was this shul, it's a big, large shul. Either way, he davened there. And he was selling the mitzvahs. They were selling the aliyah, selling the mitzvahs. And as it came to Psicha Fina'ila, there were a few barons there. Philanthropists, wealthy people, who were vying for the honors. And Psicha Fina'ila got pretty fierce. The fight for it. And there was a Baron Ginsburg there. Baron Ginsburg offered 2,000 ruble. It's a phenomenal amount of money. 2,000 ruble. And within a minute, before everyone caught their breath, there was another Baron, Baron Pollack. And he offered 2,500 ruble on the spot. Rabbi Shmuel said it's approximately $100,000 today. So it's an astronomical amount of money. And everyone's catching their breath. This is crazy. 2,500 ruble, $100,000 for Psicha Tana'ila. And this man, Baron Pollack, who's now been told that he won the bid, turns around to the person sitting next to him and he says, "By the way, what is Psicha Tana'ila?" So the man's incredulous. He says, "You just spent 2,500 ruble on something which you don't know what it is?" So he says, "Listen, I know Baron Ginsburg. Baron Ginsburg knows a deal when he sees one. If he's willing to pay 2,000 ruble, I'm willing to spend 2,500 ruble. Now tell me what I need to do." So Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapira, he says, if Baron Pollack, just by the fact that Baron Ginsburg is willing to spend 2,000 ruble, adds 500 ruble and spends $100,000 on something, it's got to be that if the Ribbono Shel Olam tells us that something is a present, something is good, no matter how, if you understand it yet or not, it may be work till we appreciate it. Trust the Ribbono Shel Olam is matana tova. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, some people appreciate it more, some less, but trust me. Tell them, leichloidim, tell them it's good. Tell them it's a present. Tell them it comes from Beis Genozai. It's one of my best things. I'm giving it over to them. Shabbos Shema. I have goodies for Klal Yisrael. Just tell them it's good. And that way they'll trust that there's good in it. So even when times are difficult and we don't always appreciate it, we can understand that it is good. And perhaps with some work, we will appreciate it. Listen, Alpert, the great Talmud of Moshe Feinstein, says on the Posuk, which is the name of the Chofetz Chaim, Mi ha'ish he'chofetz Chaim, who's the man who wants life? Oy hev yomim lirois toiv. Usually translated, who's the man who wants life? The man who wants to see his days good. And then we continue with the answer. If you guard your tongue from speaking evil, then you'll have good days, you'll have a great life. And Mr. Alper had a different way of reading the Pasuk. He said, Mi ha'ish hechofetz chaim, who is the man who wants life? He said, the next words is the answer already. The man who wants life is oyhev yomim lirois toiv. Here's the answer. If you want life, see the world in a good way. See the world. Oyhev yom, a man who loves his days, lirois toiv, is looking for the good in his days, in his life. It's already the answer. Memela, and therefore will be, you won't be speaking Lashon Hara, you'll have nothing negative to say. Netzoy l'sheni meira. So the men were going through the land, Eretz Canaan, they were traversing the terrain. And as they were going and seeing the great giants, the things which were strange and difficult to understand, they had that choice. And because they chose the negative side, because they chose to see the giants as being frightening things, they got the 40 years in the Midbar. The Rosh Yeshiva tells of Bloch was once fundraising in America. And as he sat down with a philanthropist, the man said to him, "Look, if I have the Rosh Hashiva of Tells, I understand why you're here. You're here in a fundraising tip for Tells. This is when Tells was in Tells." So he said, "Of course I want shares in this institution. I'll buy the shares, but I would love to hear Dvar Torah. If I have the Rosh Hashiva in my home, please first tell me Dvar Torah, and of course then I'll write you a check." And this is the vort that he told him. It's a beautiful idea. He said to him in the Gemara in Bechoros, Nun Ches Amud Beis, the Gemara, it's a Mishnah, the Mishnah tells us how they did Maise Behema, how one should do Maise Behema. You have animals, you're supposed to take one tenth, one out of ten, and give it away. How do you do it? So the Mishnah tells you, you make a small hole in your fence, just enough for one animal to go through, just enough for one sheep. The Mishnah says very specifically, not for two, just for one. And then they go past, and the Mishnah painstakingly says, Aleph, Beis, I'm not exaggerating, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, and the tenth one is for you. It's a very long Mishnah. We all know Mishnahs are very concise. The Gemara spends pages on explaining each Mishnah. Here the Mishnah tells you, and the Tanna goes on to tell you, and if you did it by just taking 10 out of 100, or 50 out of 500, it's no good. You must do it this way. So the Rashiva asked this man, why is it? What's the big deal? And if two go through the hole? So I have to make holes in my fence, let one through, paint the tenth one. Big deal, I took 10 out, it's the same result. And the Mishnah tells you, out of one, two, three, he told him, listen, he says, it's difficult for a person to take 10 out of 100 and give it away. It's difficult. They're my sheep. So the Torah tells you, do this. One, for you. Number two is for you. Number three is for you. Number four is for you. Five, six, seven. These are all your sheep. Eight, nine of you, just a tenth one, put a paint thing, give it away. Now again, number 11 is for you, number 12 is for you. If you appreciate each one, if the man who's giving away these sheep appreciates each one that he has for himself, it's much easier to give away one in 10. If you take 10, wow, I've given away 50 sheep out of my 500. That's a nice piece of my flock. So the Torah does it in an easy way, and if you don't do it this way, you shouldn't do it. It doesn't work, it's not maestrous. The lesson the Torah is teaching us by this method is to focus on appreciating what we do have. And therefore, the things we don't have become easier. Or in this case, the things we have to give away, al pi halacha. Let's take this a step further. So we said the makor of Lashon Hara is the negative perspective that people have, and a choice that people make in life. But I think we can take it further and see it in the parasha as well, that it starts within oneself. And let me explain. In the Pasuk it says, "Vanehi be'einenu kechagovim." We were in our own eyes like grasshoppers in front of these huge giants. "V'chein hayinu be'einem," and that's how we seemed in their eyes. Rashi tells us that they heard them speaking. Yeah, they heard them speaking. They heard them saying, this chagovim, this grasshoppers, ants walking through the grass here. What's this? Sorry? There's two gerses in Rashi, yeah? Ants and grasshoppers. Nisach acher. Either way, we're all right. The ants and the grasshoppers. That's how they heard them saying that. Okay. I believe it's the Kotzka. I tried to verify it, but I wasn't able to. But I believe, my memory serves me well, it's the Kotzka Rebbe who says this. If somebody knows, please tell me. The Kotzka Rebbe says, but there's an Arichas Haloshen, it's a lengthy posuk. We were in their eyes like grasshoppers, and so we were in their eyes. That's double. Seems to be superfluous. She said, oh, yeah, her device is the Kotzka. Yeah? Sorry? We're safe with that. Leon Shaltera, you put the name on it. So I think it's the Kotzka, Ezok Dazoi. He says, had they walked through the grass, yes, very little people compared to these huge giants, had they walked through the grass and heard these massive footsteps, looked up and seen these huge towering figures above them, and straightened their backs, and said to themselves, watch Moshe Rabbeinu take out these people, this is going to be very exciting. They wouldn't have called them grasshoppers. They wouldn't have. Look at these little, prideful little people down there. They wouldn't have called them grasshoppers. Do you know why they called you grasshoppers? Because you felt like grasshoppers. When you saw these huge people, you shriveled in your skin. You felt like you're not worth anything. They may just trample on me any second. So they looked at you as grasshoppers. The world sees a person the way the person sees themselves. If a person feels like a shmata, that's how the world sees them. So even if they were tiny, had they straightened their backs and put their nose up in the air and felt like Yidden, representatives of Klal Yisrael, the giants would not have called them little ants. So the source is the negativity towards themselves. And when they couldn't see themselves as representatives of Klal Yisrael, as sorry chamishim, it spilt over to the way they saw Eretz Canaan and the negative perspective of the world. But it starts within the meraglim themselves. And we see this also when Kalev comes with his drosha against the influence of the meraglim. Because Kalev says to them, Oloi Nalev, Yerashno Yisrael, we will be able to go up to Eretz Yisrael. Ki yochol nuchala. We will be successful, says Rashi. Afilu bashamayim, even if it's going to be, if the Hashem would say, Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan is up in heaven, and we've got to get there somehow. Asu sulamos, we'll start making ladders. Ve'olusham, natzliach b'chol devarov. We will be successful. You see in his counterattack, you see in the way Kalev is speaking back, people, we can do this. Yochel nuchala, the Pasuk says, natzliach, we will be successful. What you're missing is your belief in yourself, your belief in that the Rebbeinu will make us be successful. That's what he's coming with. Reb Moshe Feinstein asks in Drash Moshe, he says, what's this ladders? Ladders don't get you to heaven. Ladders don't get you to Shemayim. This is not even the beginning of the way. So Reb Moshe Feinstein, you've got to do yours. You've got a major goal which doesn't even make sense to you. Start climbing. Just start going up. Get that ladder, get that step ladder, and start walking to heaven. That's where Hashem told you to go. And if we can expand on this a little bit, a ladder is an extremely limited tool, in fact. Ladders don't actually stand on their own. They either need another frame, another ladder to lean against, or a building, a wall, a tree, something stable which you lean against. And then you can go just above that level, which means a ladder doesn't even take you higher than anything else that already exists. It doesn't take you anywhere. And perhaps that's why the ladder is used. Even if I know there's a limit to this expedition, there's a limit to how far I'm going to be able to climb with this ladder. Nevertheless, start climbing. Do your bit. Yeah, do your bit. There's that famous moshel, some of you may have heard it, of this fellow who is told to climb 100 floors within a certain amount of time, and if you do, you get majorly rewarded. It's impossible. And so many people have tried and no one manages, and this one just, as they get to the 13th, 14th, 15th floor, they realize the time's running out, it's impossible. And there's one person who perseveres, and he runs up floor after floor, he's on the 17th floor, 18th floor, he's still within time, he's got one more minute, he has to get to the 40th floor, it's not happening. As he gets to the 20th floor, just in the nick of time, he sees a lift which takes him in several seconds to the 40th floor, and he gets his reward. That's what life is about. You start climbing the ladder, you get your three-step step ladder, if that's all we have, you start climbing to heaven, if that's where Hashem told you to go. As he's up Ramosha, as he says Pshat, Kalev was telling them, it may look impossible. It seems impossible to us. Huge giants, fruit, people dying, we don't understand yet, but we've got to do our bit. If it's right, do it. You'll be successful. Natzliach. He was telling them, believe in yourselves and it will spill over to your attitude. Rabbianko Galinsky said that his father, who learned in Radim, he's called Rav Tzvi Galinsky, once overheard a bocher asking the Chofetz Chaim in the yeshiva a question. He asked him, you know, we're trying to do mitzvahs, we're learning Torah, it's all very nice. But the Zohar says, this Bacha said, Kol pekuda delespe dechilu rechimu lois seliku le'ela. Anything we do, mitzvahs, Torah, which is not done in the right way, with the right pachad, the right fear of heaven, the right intentions, doesn't go up, just doesn't ascend to heaven. Just what's the point? I mean, yeshiva Bacha, teenager, what's the point of what we're doing? As if I have all the right intentions. So the Chofetz Chaim, this is all overheard by Rabbi Yankel's father. The Chofetz Chaim told him, I want to tell you what happened to me. Just a few years ago, I met a baker. The Chofetz Chaim told him, I met a baker. How's business? Not great. Why? What's the issue? I make 1,000 loaves a day. Bagels, rolls, challahs. And people just keep coming, complaining, this is too burnt, and they want exchange, and they don't want to pay for it, they want the money back, and The hole didn't go all the way through the bagel. They're just coming with all sorts of complaints. So I'm losing money. I'm not making money in half my schaira. So, a few years later, I meet the same baker. How's business? Great. What's going on? Same bakery, same amount of loaves. What's the issue? It's the war now. Rebbe, it's World War I. Nobody's complaining. If they have bread, they grab it, they pay full price. No one's complaining. Nobody comes back. There's no money back. There's no complaints. There's no, this is burnt, this is corner, this is three corners, two corners. They just take whatever there is, pay full price, and are making lots of money. So the Chofetz Chaim turned to this Bach and he said, there were times where Hashem expected perfection of human beings. Because they were able to do it. The challenges weren't as great. In today's world, the Chofetz Chaim was saying, with communism, socialism, there's a war out there. The Bosh is taking anything. Whatever it is you offer, he'll take it. He won't complain about the burnt edges. You're doing it, it's a mitzvah, it's Torah, it's a tefillah, you did your best, it's fine. The Bosh is taking it. So if we sometimes feel in ourselves that it's difficult to see that what I'm doing is really worthwhile, perhaps we have moments like that, the Chofetz Chaim was telling us that it's not that way. The Bosh was taking whatever it is that we're giving. But Yahas Kolev says, he silences the people in order to say his drosha. And he gets a tremendous schar for this. The Pasuk tells us later, V'avdi kolev, Ekev hoysa ruach acheres imoy, I will bring him to the land. And the Chidushi Harim says, this is a promise which we don't find elsewhere. A man who knows I have at least 40 years to live. Who walks around with that guarantee? He said, Kolev walked around with a guarantee of at least 40 years of living. Because he was spending another 40 years in the desert, and he's been told he's going into the land. Nice. For what? For silencing the people for a few minutes with zero results. Nothing happened. They immediately started their whole, when they realized Kolev's not on their side, they started all over again with their negative speeches, bringing the whole nation with them. What did he do? He gave a few minutes of speech trying to get people to back on track. Dr. Moshe Feinstein, he says a tremendous vort here. He says, he first says what people might say, and he says it's a doichek, he doesn't want to say that. That perhaps there were some people, you know, even if you give a drosha to thousands of people, there might be a couple of people who are inspired. He says it's a doichek to say that that was a tremendous schar that Kolev received for that. So he says as follows. He says, just like we understand in physical life, that a few minutes of life are so precious. If a Hatzolah member is able to extend someone's life by a few minutes, it's so precious. He says it's the same thing in Chayei Ruchni, in the spiritual realm. He says if it's true in Gashmias, it's true in Ruchnias. And therefore, for those few minutes that Kolev was giving his drosha, he says, Rabboisai, Moshe Rabbeinu took us through Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, and surely he can take us up to Eretz Yisrael. They were inspired, and he proves it. He says, because then you see that the Meraglim had to give another drosha to undo Kolev's influence. They had to start all over again in the Pesukim, telling them how negative it is, how bad it is. They come up with new ideas they hadn't said before. They had to undo the influence. So there were a few minutes where Klal Yisrael had changed. But there were no results. It doesn't matter. A few minutes of tshuva in their minds of perhaps Kolev is right, actually. Even if within 3 minutes they're all back to square one, you've accomplished. It's called success. Just like we understand a few more minutes of life and the person died anyway is success. A few minutes of ruchnius and the person went exactly to the position he was in before, success. Which is really a life changer, because it means any moment that we even have a thought, or that we're trying to influence on our child, or whatever it is, and we don't see results, so surely not immediately, and sometimes not in our lifetime. But there's those few minutes or those few seconds which are so precious, as we see from Vayahas Kolev and the tremendous schar that he received for that. David HaMelech says, Shkiyos miyovin ministoris nakeni. This is after the misdeed with Bathsheba, however we understand it, the Gemara says we shouldn't call it a chait. So Shkiyos miyovin. David HaMelech is now beseeching Hashem for mechila, and he says, please Ribbono Shel Olam, be moichel me. Ministoris nakeni. Cleanse me. Gam mizeidim, even from things I did intentionally. Please, be moichel. And then he says, al yim shuluvi, which Chazal tell us means they shouldn't rule over me. Don't allow the Rabbonim, the Chachomim, to say things against me as the Melech Yisrael. Although I did something which was a mistake, they shouldn't be blasphemizing, they shouldn't be talking negatively about me. And Rashi on Tehillim on this Pasuk says that David HaMelech was using the method of a peddler. Rashi. He says, what does a peddler do? He says, a real smooth-talking peddler comes in. He knows that if he asks for a meal, he's not going to get it. So therefore, the peddler comes in and he says, could I have a glass of water, which he knows is cheap and easy to give. So the host will say, yes, you can have a glass of water. They said, do you mind if I take an onion with it? An onion? Cheap, big deal. Some salt to go with the onion. Salt with the onion, fine. I can't have a salted onion without bread. It's too bitter. Okay, come sit down, have some bread. So he gets there slowly. And this is the moshel Rashi uses for how David HaMelech is asking his bakasha for mechila. Which means, says the Tolner Rebbe, which means, go through the order of the pasuk. Which Chazal tell us, he's asking for mechila, he's asking to be cleansed, even from intentional avirus, and then he asks finally for the ultimate request, don't let people talk against me. Which is very difficult. It means that the most important bakosha, that David HaMelech is asking after the bread, which is the purpose of the whole request of this peddler, the bread, the main meal, is that people shouldn't talk against me. What's this? David HaMelech is on a PR. He needs his PR to be okay. He needs people to think good of him. Surely he's beyond that. Says the Talmud Rebbe, it's not for PR. It's not about his reputation. He said, David HaMelech knew the ultimate secret, that if a person starts hearing other people say negative things about him, he'll start feeling like a nothing. And it's extremely important for him to feel valued. If he feels valued and important, then he feels, I can't do these averus, so I must do these mitzvahs, I'm a Baal Chesed, I am a special person. So his biggest and most important request is, Hashem, don't let them talk against me. I might start feeling that way. So, going backwards now, they felt like Chagovim, because they thought of themselves like Chagovim, and therefore they heard the giants say they were Chagovim. But if a person chooses, had they chosen to see Eretz Yisrael in the positive light, they would have felt like Kolev told them, Natsliach, we will be successful. Which is why they had the 40 years against the 40 days. Because it was 40 days of seeing the world in a negative way. Had they chosen to see it positively, there would have been very different results. They would have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael. And so, fulfilling our purpose in life, as the Mesillas Yeshorim says, is to actually enjoy life. And then enjoying life means seeing everything in a positive way, and then we can finally channel it through Ribbono Shel Olam B'Siyata D'Shmaya.